welcome back to the end of the week here at the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola, and very excited to welcome, as always, on Fridays, Brett Ehrlich. How's it going, Brett?
Oh, I'm so happy, John. I forgot to tell you earlier, I'm so happy to be here in the neighborhood. And your show is so great in my mind because it definitely marks that this is the end of the week for me.
And that's I get to
hang out with my closest friend at the company, Sophie Morrison.
Damn. Anyway, finally, that almost got my hopes up, pride up, I don't know. Anyway, then I'm not as excited to have you here as I was a moment or two ago, but still kind of excited. And I'm very excited for Fridays too. And so this show is both the end of the week, which is great. It has one of my five favorite times of the week, which is when we do the garbage people. But some people might say, yeah, but like you still have to do the main show after. But like this is like important behind the scenes information that maybe Brett can already guess. I'm technically doing the main show and I'm technically leading the main show, but it's a power panel with Cenk Uygur. I'm barely on it anyway. It's really not even work at that point. It's super simple. And so it does still feel like Fridays.
And now you don't even have to go to the morning meeting because everyone else, there was, for this is even super more inside. But if you want more inside information about how the show gets made, you too can participate every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, where I do the Sunday stream with you, the viewers on Twitch, twitch.tv/TYT. And I take suggestions and we work together on producing the next day's show. But on Fridays, we had been doing the morning meeting after this show was done because John and I were pretty much indisposed and we wanted John's input. Then we realized John's input doesn't really do much. Why do we need him?
Even on this show.
As Alfred Hitchcock said, the guy, the people on camera are just cattle. You tell them what to do, they do it for you. They mindlessly regurgitate thought cud from one news stomach into another, and that's it. So we had the meeting already, but no, to alleviate some of John's stress and definitely the production team's stress, you didn't have to do it. So the show's already selected for you, and I think maybe three of your stories will be produced, maybe four.
Oh, that's good. That's
by
good.
By the time you get there.
I'm glad. By the way, while you were attacking me viciously to protect some of my ego, I was reading the chat, and there's a comment from one of the people who's like, "Cenk, John is letting TYT down. Basically, he's bad." And I just thought, Cenk isn't watching. And if he was, he's not in the Damage Report's chat. Only I'm seeing that. And then I thought, I think they know that. I think that's why they did it. Anyway, so today's going very well for me as a psychologically and emotionally. I think I'm rolling into the weekend feeling good about myself. But anyway, you know what we've got today? We've got a lot of stories, probably too many, but a lot of them are fun. Some of them are important. Maybe there's some overlap and we'll discover that together. But first of all, I wanted to thank everyone for being here and remind you to please hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And we're gonna be talking about a lot of things. If you have thoughts, questions, concerns about any of them, you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, and we will respond as we go. So with that, Brett, you ready to see if we can get through all this material?
Very, very much.
Okay, I got very serious. Okay, last night, President Joe Biden delivered his address to the people. And it seemed fine. Like we did a special. It was, you know, a little bit slow, kind of a little bit boring, but it had some good news. Like for instance, he announced that he will direct states to make all adults ages 18 and up eligible for the coronavirus vaccine by the 1st of May. That doesn't mean it's necessarily gonna happen, but that's his directive. So that seems good. And then he added on to that, maybe something we could look forward to if everything goes according to plan.
If we do all this, if we do our part, if we do this together, by July the 4th, there's a good chance you, your families and friends will be able to get together in your backyard or in your neighborhood and have a cookout or a barbecue and celebrate Independence Day. That doesn't mean large events with lots of people together, but it does mean small groups will be able to get together. After this long, hard year, that will make this Independence Day something truly special, where we not only mark our independence as a nation, but we begin to mark our independence from this virus.
Okay, so that seems good. It's what Biden does. It's like reasonable, kind of optimistic. I can't imagine how the right is going to have a big problem with it. but you know what's coming. Here's a little bit from the insane mind of Mark Levin.
Yeah, this speech that Joe Biden gave is the most disgusting, propagandistic speech that a demagogue, even a politician, has ever given. It is pathetic. And
this speech right here makes me want to kill myself live on air. What are you talking about, Brett? It's disgusting, demagogue. What did you say,
guys? Well, you know those demagogues, and we think of all the demagogues in history and videos that come from like fascist regimes or even communist authoritarian regimes. You know how they're always like, everyone, they have people lined up and posters with propaganda saying like, maybe some bratwurst by Independence Day. Like that's that's not how it works, guys. Like no demagogue is famous for maybe lulling you into a false sense of security, but like never understatement. No demagogue has been boring. This like even when the reason I laughed when it came out of the video clip the first time when you were like, okay, like that's it. It really is like
yeah, sure.
Sure, fine, nice. Yeah. The one thing I took away from his speech was like May 1st, which used to be like Mayday, 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 is now like May. Hey, I'll be eligible, and then I have to go online and find out what that means. Mm-hmm. But there is no way. I guess it's fascinating because we always wondered like what is the barrier? What bar is so low? And what reality is so undeniable that the Fox messaging machine can't blow it out of proportion? And this speech just proves that that bar does not exist, that it could be the most boring, non-controversial speech ever, really. And still Fox will be like, this is a demagogue. Hide your kids.
Is this more like out of proportion with what's happening than like when Starbucks made red and green cups and Fox lost it? Or like when the Dr. Seuss publisher decided, hey, you know, a couple of his books, these ones, and nobody knew what they were. And they're like, yeah, so we're not going to sell them anymore. Oh my God. Like all of it is so out of proportion. And at the very least, even if it doesn't strike you as like detached from reality as a viewer, isn't it exhausting at the very least? I mean, even if you are predisposed to get freaked out about one or two of these, to just do it every day seems like it would be so tiring. And the audience is already so old. I don't know how their hearts put up with it. They must lose a significant number of their viewers every day from heart attacks.
So it's interesting, John. A couple things I'll say. The Morning Consult did a poll asking Republican voters, essentially, what did they hear a lot about and what did they hear a little bit about? And the one thing that Republican voters heard a lot about during a time of negotiations over COVID relief, the thing they heard the most about was Dr. Seuss. And Eric Erickson, who is one of the worst, who's so boring that he doesn't even come up with two different names, first and last. Eric Erickson said, listen, you guys need to understand this, and announced the, you know, said the quiet part loud. It's that more voters out there will remember the Dr. Seuss controversy than the thing that materially affects their life. Now, did that actually play out over the election, the 2020 presidential election? No. There was something that was so real that it actually did affect people's lives, and they voted based on that. And it was, by all accounts, coronavirus and fatigue of the kind of blowing BS nonsense out of proportion that the right wing machine had done. And but this is very much their strategy, is to blow these kinds of things out of proportion rather than focus on anything that would actually affect your life.
Yeah, I don't get it.
You do, but that's the problem, right? You do get it. No. That's what's so infuriating to me about it.
I guess I should be more specific. I don't get I don't get how you could live your life as a member of the media doing that. I don't get why it's so effective on so many people. Those are the things I don't get. I get financially why they do it, and I get why, you know, it feels good for the audience to just hate, like the 2 minute hate, like, and hey, what if you took a 2 minute hate and you stretch it out over 24 hours of news? Like, I get that that's appealing. We know that people like emotional stuff, but I don't know. There's stuff I don't like about it. I don't want it to be true.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Fox responded to Biden's speech with sort of just generalized, ah, but then they also made some specific claims. And in particular, the fact that Biden said that by July 4th, we might be able to have small get-togethers, that raised the ire of Laura Ingraham, who tried to make a comparison to something that happened a year ago. Let's see how that went.
Well, what were the journalists saying? Their reaction to this pseudoscience?
I think it was very moving. I thought it was really important when he talked about that July 4th goal.
He is the guy we need right now.
July 4th, yeah. You know, right. He put that on the calendar as well. So
backyard barbecue.
Right.
People are going to be looking at their calendars now with some hope.
If we all do our part by the 4th of July, we might be able to celebrate Independence Day together, which would be incredible.
I don't even know who that last person was with the mask. Who was that? Oh, Chris Hayes. Okay. Now, how is that based in any science? Now, I seem to remember a different reaction from the press corps who were crucifying Trump for pegging reopening to a holiday last spring.
President Trump pushing the country to get up and running by Easter, but top medical experts are warning it is much, much too soon.
We're going to have everything lifted by Easter. No.
The president saying, I want the whole world to be opened up by Easter. And think about what Bill Gates just said. You do that too early and you're going to be ignoring all the bodies in the corner.
Oh my gosh, I hadn't seen that until just then. Now, of course, the truth is the press was acting like the comms department for the DNC last spring.
She is like the cringiest of all of them. But my favorite part was Brett hadn't seen that video, so he didn't know what she was going to compare it to. So Brett, what in real time did you realize?
John, it's worse than that. I had seen the video. I had watched it, but even the second time around, it still hits pretty good. Where she's like, she is mad at Biden she's mad at people for comparing. It's so stupid that I still can't wrap my mind. It's like Biden said, she thinks it's the same thing to say, we should open the economy back up when infections are on the crazy rise. She thinks that's the same as saying, well, we have a vaccine, and if we give everyone the vaccine, it should be better.
Yeah.
She thinks I have a metaphor. At the beginning of the, like,
that's
go ahead.
So I think maybe it would be like, oh, So this doctor says you're totally free of cancer and you're all happy. And yet when you found out that that last doctor misdiagnosed it as not cancer, you were all mad at him. Like, I think that's similar.
Well,
but Brett, I know that I say I don't get it and then you point out that we do. Sure, but a Republican watching that, do they not come to the same conclusion? Well, I mean, to be fair, that was a year ago and there was no vaccine and it was really bad.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy. I guess the other metaphor is like the weather report. It's like when there's a hurricane coming and someone's like, everyone doing the weather report is like, there will be a hurricane tomorrow. And Trump's like, we're gonna have all these big outdoor picnics tomorrow. And then another weather person says, 2 weeks later, like, okay, the last vestiges of the hurricane have passed. It's okay to go outside. And she's mad that everyone thought the guy who wanted to have the picnics outdoor in a hurricane was a crazy person. It's like, yes, because that is a crazy person thing to do.
Well, and really fast. So two things that she said specifically that I want to make sure we comment on. One was, I don't even know who that person in the mask is. Oh, it's Chris Hayes. Nice.
That's in your prompter,
dude. For years, she's been on TV. That was terrible. That was so bad. But anyway, the second was, what's the scientific basis for the fourth? Look, the fourth could end up not being what he's making it out to be. It's possible we could still have a lot of COVID. I would say that at that point, it's likely it's going to be spreading amongst people who voluntarily don't get the vaccine, which she's encouraging on her show. But the idea is that if everyone has access to an appointment for a vaccine on May 1st, that would provide 2 whole months of people being vaccinated. At that point, a lot of people will be vaccinated and it might be safe. And even then he's saying only small gatherings with your family. To pretend that he's jumping way ahead of everything, I feel like he's being incredibly cautious. And it's not to say that he's definitely gonna be right, but it's certainly safer than 1 week into lockdown, Trump saying by Easter we'll be good. That is not the same thing. Obviously, it's not the same thing.
They're so not hungry over there. Like the capitalists on the right would say that competition really breeds innovation. But the thing is, there's no competition with Fox News. Like for 5 minutes, there was competition over at Newsmax when Trump was pointing it out on social media. But now everything's back to normal. Tucker's back to being number one. Fox News is back on the rise because they all just forgot about Newsmax and have kind of moved on from it. But when you look at Hannity and when you look at Laura Ingraham, it's like there's no drive to really be the best at this. You can see that they're absolutely on autopilot because part of it is that there's no one really challenging them. And because they're really the only game in town. And the other part is they know how ridiculous they're being. The default setting for these guys, as they're essentially doing cold reads of their scripts as the show goes on, you can see that they're not really aware. These aren't their words that they're reading off the teleprompter. Yeah. The only thing that Laura Ingraham knows is the tone to have. And her tone is this dismissive. I can't believe it. Everything is delivered the same damn way. Let me check. Who is that? Oh, that's right. Chris Hayes. She reads on the teleprompter. Those are the lines that are so cringy when you see them in movies because they're so bad. And that's when really good actors are doing it. These news actors suck at it. And I can't believe that their audiences don't pick up on it. Or they do, man. Or they do because this is the same audience that might be watched. Like soap operas were wildly popular for the longest time. The acting's bad, but it's just some crazy storyline to follow in the middle of the day when there's nothing else to do.
Maybe
that's it. It's entertainment at this point.
Okay, so we've pretty much assumed for about a year now that Republican governance, both in terms of the governors, but then also the effect of the president, led to really bad outcomes when it came to the pandemic. But actual like scientific analysis of differences in outcomes for the pandemic across areas controlled by Republicans versus Democrats, we haven't had a ton of that. We have a bit more now. So here is what has been found in this new study. COVID-19 case and death rates in states with Republican governors have been markedly higher than those with Democratic leaders for much of the pandemic, suggesting decisions like lifting stay-at-home orders and declining to issue mask mandates likely resulted in higher COVID-19 metrics as GOP governors now go even further to rescind public health measures. Now, all of this seems common sense, doesn't mean it would work out that way, but it looks like it in fact did. So researchers found that while COVID-19 incidents and death rates were initially higher in Democratic-led states, some of the earliest epicenters of the pandemic were states like New York and New Jersey. Republican states soon overtook them and their rates remained higher through December. GOP states started having more cases per 100,000 people than Democratic ones starting June 3rd, reaching a maximum of 1.77 times more cases on June 28th. Republican-led states' COVID-19 death rates overtook Democratic states on July 4th, how patriotic, reaching up to 1.8 times as many deaths on August 5th, and they had a higher test positivity rate starting May 30th that peaked at 1.7 times higher on June 23rd. So look, we talk in general terms across a lot of different issue areas about the difference between having Democrats in charge and having Republicans in charge. It is not often that you can so directly like quantify the difference there and understand that the difference that's being demonstrated there is cases which can result in lifelong issues, even if you survive with COVID, let alone the fact that so many more people died, and not magically, not mysteriously, very reasonably, because people weren't encouraged to wear masks, they weren't required to, things were kept open. When there were lockdowns, they were opened prematurely. We knew at the time that that would lead to more deaths, and this study is showing that it did. And that's very easy to see the trends here.
Yeah. It's so weird that what it comes down to for me is that original instinct when you hear something. Hopefully the original instinct when you hear something that you have is to question it. But the other thing I hope is that what you use to question the information being given to you is based in reality. And I think that's where the two parties typically diverge. Like Democrat or people on the left question it in line with the scientific method. They question what's given to them, saying, does this go in connection with the things that have been tangibly proven to me over time using precedent and fact? But what I find too often from these Republican governors is what benefits them in this weird rhetorical war that they're always in. And so they always initially ask questions based on whether this will get them more votes relative to what the discussion is. And so this strange defiance is good in some instances when people are trying to take your rights away, when folks are trying to quash your ability to exercise the First Amendment in a very real way, then it is good to question those things. But when I look at all this and all my skeptical friends who are on the right side of the, on the right, they come back and I look at them and say, it just makes more sense to me to cover your mouth with an airborne illness that is, you know, the little water droplets coming out of your mouth. I feel like we should cover that. And then if I'm not vaccinated, I should probably stay away from people. That is the guiding premise behind all of this. And it's rejected because of this weird war that the right always feels like it's in. And it's proven to be absolutely detached from reality in every single day in other respects. So like we talked about earlier in the show, when they're reacting to the most boring Biden speech of all time, as though it's a demagogue shouting from a pulpit to a crowd of throngs of people who must execute the North Korean dance or die. Like that's not what's happening here. And that's what's so frustrating about it to me.
But I think you're totally right. It is this always at war with everyone mode. It's like Littlefinger, but for an entire political ideology. Sometimes it's just a distraction that provides a political opportunity cost. If you know millions and millions of people are convinced by right-wing media to be focused more on Dr. Seuss than COVID aid or the minimum wage, then that sucks. But when they think they're fighting a war on masks that doesn't have to exist, but that because they opt into this war, there are casualties as in a real war, potentially hundreds of thousands of people, then that's like the worst example of that. You could have just relaxed and not been crazy and a lot of people would be alive. And it's not just them, of course. Mostly it's right wingers that were convinced to take down their guard. The right wing that spends all of the rest of their political time believing that you need to fortify your home and have a million weapons and all that, were convinced to lay down all of the defenses, willingly contracting and dying from COVID, but also taking some other people with them that in theory might have been trying to be responsible, but they're surrounded by tons of people that are not. So that's
yeah, important. And you just wish this was just a Dr. Seuss thing, but it's not. I wish they were just like, you know, some benign craziness, but this is positively provably like malignant. Worst.
Exactly. This might be the worst potential outcome from the weird, sick way that our politics operates.
And it makes sense. I mean, that's what I was talking about for months. Sorry, that's what I was talking about for months and months before all of this happened, when it was like, will Trump lose the election? And my takeaway was like, it just wasn't bad enough for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And in no matter what it was, no matter how much, you know, race relations in America, civil rights were under siege, it just wasn't economically bad enough for like generic white people. And then it got that way. And that's what turned the tide. And this was something that tangibly affected them, as opposed to like the default gripiness that they always had.
Yeah. Throughout this week, Governor Cuomo has faced additional allegations, bringing the number of women who have alleged sexual harassment or sexual assault up to at least 6, depending on when you're watching this. And as a result of this, New York state lawmakers have now opened an impeachment inquiry into Governor Cuomo. They had a 3-hour emergency meeting. The state assembly announced that it would give its Judiciary Committee broad jurisdiction to investigate allegations of misconduct against Mr. Cuomo, including the sexual harassment claims and his administration's handling of virus-related deaths of nursing home patients. The decision sets the stage for what could be the state's first impeachment effort in more than a century. In addition to that, you have the announcement of 59 Democrats in the state legislature, almost 40% of the party's members in the assembly and the Senate, signing onto a statement demanding that he immediately resign. So, you know, way faster than this impeachment procedure could potentially produce. And in addition to that, you then have New York Congress people weighing in, with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeting, after 2 accounts of sexual assault, 4 accounts of harassment, the Attorney General's investigation finding the governor's admin hid nursing home data from the legislature and the public, we agree with the 55 plus members of the New York State Legislature that the governor must resign. That was AOC and Congressman Bowman. But very soon after that, 11 of 19 Democratic House reps from New York were calling for him to resign, including, by the way, Jerry Nadler, the most senior of all of them. And so this has been snowballing and accelerating quite a bit. He is believed that in some scheduled call that he's having later on today, it will not be to resign, that he will continue to fight this. But Brett, what do you think about how fast the Democratic Party, or at least an increasing chunk of it, is moving against the governor?
I like, there are the whole part about undercounting nursing home deaths is a giant freaking scandal standing on its own. Mm-hmm. And then people are hearing about these like sexual assault allegations going like, I don't know, the Me Too movement, there was a cloud following it where you had very real advancements made. And then there's some people still wondering like, I remember being mad at these 5 people, but I don't remember any of what the accounts were. Was Aziz Ansari like evil, or was that the one where I was like not guilty? I don't remember. If that's the lens, I'm not making any judgments on any of that, but if that's even the lens by which you are judging the Andrew Cuomo resignation issue, and then you remember that he and his office undercounted, and because of their failure, nursing home deaths, I feel like it's not out of the question for a bunch of representatives from that state to say, enough's enough, man. That's it. Mm-hmm. You did this thing. And what are the breaks on that from actually happening? There's this darlingness that the media has for Cuomo. He was the one who, when this was all going down and they needed a good guy and a bad guy, Trump was the bad guy, something I disagree with, or something I agree with. He was the bad guy, but they had Cuomo as that dude. They'd just be like, here's what a leader does. And he would say ventilators, ventilators, ventilators for 3 hours. Yeah. And it was like, now I feel good about what the guy down the street is saying about us. And And now that's all up in the air. And I feel like when it comes down to it, the big revelation that a bunch of people had before, but that I had this week, is that when you're looking at tribalism, how do you identify tribalism versus people who are just like really principled? And it's hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And if you can find the hypocrisy, that's tribalism, because people have a double standard because their priority is their side winning and not the facts winning. And in this situation, if you're just dragging your feet because there's a D next to his name, then your hypocrisy reveals your tribalism. And as a result of that, you need to be very honest in your appraisal of what you are doing and what is right and what is wrong. And as I say, like, just even if nothing's been proven in a court of law about the sexual harassment claims, and there are going to be investigations about that. The nursing home stuff, man, that is that is really, really, really bad already.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think, it's a part of the impeachment investigation. AOC referenced it in her thing. Like, I think both of these are being considered simultaneously. I think the fact that you have so many recurring updates of more and more women coming out, more so than you have new updates about the nursing home scandal, drives more media attention, obviously, I think. Plus, because it's like a scandal that involves huge numbers taking place in a time where lots of people are dying, is less like, humans gravitate to individual people and faces and names. And that side of the scandal, I think, has been providing more of that. Like, if it was, here are particular people in nursing homes that they pretended died of something else, maybe that would draw more of the attention. But in any event, I am glad that the Democrats, at least this number of Democrats, and it's a lot, like the majority of the congresspeople from that area and a significant percentage of the state reps are doing something that is not hypocritical. It is expecting that these sorts of claims be taken seriously. And still, in general, I think that both parties are generally loath to take this seriously, when taking it seriously could result in some sort of political hindrance to them. But this is a reminder once again that the parties are not the same in this area. They both might tend towards protecting their own, but the Democrats sometimes will ask for resignations or try to push people out. The Republicans effectively never do.
So what do you think will happen, John? Do you think Cuomo will ever resign?
I mean, I think the only way I can really conceive of him resigning is if he thinks that impeachment is inevitable. He would prefer that he resigns rather than be impeached, I guess. So that's going to come down to, is impeachment inevitable? And at this point, I don't know the numbers. It looks like, you know, a significant percentage of the party is already against him. So I don't know. We have to see.
One fascinating aspect of this is, without the news cycle being as tumultuous, he doesn't benefit from that, well, something else shiny will come along dynamic.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Maybe if Trump was still around, that would be better for him.
Yeah,
he's probably like on the phone with Twitter to reinstate Trump right now.
I don't think he'll resign unless, you know, impeachment is happening. And I think that's something we've learned recently, that a Democrat is learning that Republicans were hoping they could get away with for a long time, which is, well, you guys can be upset, but you'll have to wait until the next election to really tell me what's what.
Yeah, and by the way, like, right now, Madison Cawthorn, as we've talked about, is facing a number of different allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault. And he goes on Fox News and they don't even bring it up. It's not even like a puff piece interview or anything. They pretend that it doesn't even exist and then do a segment about Cuomo. And the thing is, should they do the segment on Cuomo? They should. But they should also not pretend as if they have members that aren't facing similar allegations. Biden still does not have a full cabinet, but it is slightly fuller than it was before, because the Senate has now confirmed his pick for Secretary of the Interior, Representative Deb Haaland of New Mexico, on Thursday, with all Democrats and, hey, four Republicans voting to advance her confirmation, which will be on Monday. Haaland's confirmation comes a day after the Senate confirmed Michael Regan of the Environmental Protection Agency. There were some great responses to that. It's been hard fought since it's taken literally months to push this through. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says it's a big deal, historic appointment, a visionary Native woman in charge of federal lands, unequivocally progressive, Green New Deal champion, exquisitely experienced. Sister, you're going to do such a great job. I'm so proud of you and the movement. And I love that, like, it is both heroic and she has the experience, so you can get 4 Republicans after all of this time. What are you supposed to do? Who are you supposed to put up? They can put up a Republican and they get 7 at this point, Brett.
I think that's a good test. Would they ever vote for it? So you got people that have been approved in the last few days, really. Holland and Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland, I can't tell if it was support or not support, but essentially he voted yes. And some people are like, what a just little flick in the eye for Mitch McConnell to finally vote yes on Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, it is good because the direction that it had been going was the wrong direction. And this is someone who very overtly is saying, I will value the lands themselves over the capitalistic interests that seek to take their resources away at any and all costs. We'll see what gets reversed. There was the Bears Ears Monument that was privatized and oilized and all kinds of strip mine rights and whatnot. But essentially, it is good to see someone who gives a damn about the interior in charge of it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And in particular, there's a variety of people that in theory Joe Biden could have put forward that would have been, easily on day one better than any of the Republicans who over the last 4 years seem exclusively chosen because their resume says that they will directly go against the stated goal of these federal bureaucracies. But she's actually pretty good on the actual issues too. And to the extent that in that position, she can push for things like the Green New Deal, which she's a supporter for. She says she's going to move climate change priorities, tribal consultation, and a green economic recovery forward. Like, this is not just, hey, he got a person. It's a good person. And there have been a few of those. More of them have been like, for instance, as you said, Merrick Garland getting confirmed. And like, I kind of like it a little bit as sort of political karma. But it's one of those that, I don't know, maybe it's just me. People on Twitter were like freaking out, like, yeah, it took 4 years, but we got Garland. And I just can't take part in that. Like, I don't, sure, it's good, but I can't be like, yes, finally stick it in their face. I don't know. I like the Mitch McConnell part in particular because he was so singularly instrumental in stopping Merrick Garland from getting on the Supreme Court. But it's not like I wanted Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court because I'm such a fanboy of Merrick Garland. Just would have preferred him over, Gorsuch, for instance.
Yeah,
I'm with you. Anyway, but good news. What do you know? And Marsha Fudge, and and Merrick Garland, and a number of others are getting confirmed. Personally, I mostly checked out of the confirmations after Pete Buttigieg. That was everything I wanted in a confirmation. I already got it. I don't need anything else.
Dude, it was so good. It was so good. It's like, I just want to make transportation fun again. And it's like, yes, when I am driving. Cool again. When I am driving across a crumbling interstate, fearful mm-hmm. that I will fall into the Mississippi River, one thing I'm really wondering is my transportation secretary making this cool again?
This bridge seems rickety. Cool.
Nifty. We're going to paint them. We're going to put lightning bolts instead of lane lines. That's how cool we'll be.
I don't know what that means to make it cool again. I just hope it ends with him like on a unicycle or something, or a penny farthing, like something retro,
And when I think cool, I think Pete Buttigieg. What?
But they do. People who write those headlines do. He's young after all.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Young. Sometimes when I'm putting together an outfit, I opt against double pleated pants and go with a single pleated pant. That's what we're looking for in America.
Is this Luke Wilson?
He has a little mouth thing. He's like, that's what we're talking about here in America.
Kind of. You're like 25% Buttigieg, 75% Luke W, I think. Anyway.
I'm buying time by wondering, I wonder, can you take your underpants off when you're on the, it's a Zoolander reference. One hand. Come on. That's Luke Wilson. Come on.
Marjorie Greene did not enter Congress with a lot of like knowledge or experience or curiosity about the world. And that's been demonstrated pretty consistently. Like last month when she said this, I'm a regular person and I wanted to take my regular person, normal, everyday American values, which is we love our country. That got way too country. Anyway, we believe our hard earned tax dollars should just go for America, not for what? China, Russia, the Middle East, Guam, whatever, wherever, which is a weird thing to say about individual countries, entire regions of the world, and territories of the United States, which you should know because you've already been a congresswoman for like more than a month at that point. You've probably talked with their representative in the House of Representatives, but still thinks it's a foreign whatever, wherever. But thankfully, there have been some entreaties from Guam for her to potentially learn something with a bit of an olive branch. A delicious olive branch. So Crystal Paco Sen Agustin, communications director for the governor of Guam, said Congresswoman Green is a new member and we'll be paying a visit to her and delivering delicious chamorro chip cookies as part of our ongoing outreach to new members to introduce them to our wonderful island of Guam. We would be more than happy to send Representative Green's office a copy of Destiny's Landfall, a history of Guam. I would bet every cent I have and every cent I will ever have that she wouldn't read three pages of any book about the history of Guam. Like, I defy you. Here's a challenge for you for social media. Come up with something less likely to happen than her turning the last page on that book and saying, I really learned a lot. Can't think of anything. You can't think of anything.
It's so stupid.
But anyway, Brett, yeah, Guam's territory and she doesn't know, doesn't care, won't learn. And in a month, we'll have forgotten it.
Puerto Rico is one of my least favorite places in Mexico. Like, that's what it sounds like.
That's what it is.
Guam, it's so crazy. It's like at least she knows that Guam is a thing that exists. If I'm looking for the silver lining, she knows Guam's a thing, but she doesn't like Guam. And more, the problem is like she doesn't really. I'm sure there's a way to get through to her for so she could be proud that we have places like Guam, because I'm sure if you talk about like American imperialism and expansionism and having control over more places on the earth, she would be 100% all about it. Mm-hmm. But there is this fallacy that you really lock into, and you're right to do so, that being a normal everyday person is an excuse to let you be bad at something that is very essential to your job. And that doesn't apply anywhere else except two very key places. One, Congress, and two, really, it used to be like the one I could point to was like, who would you rather listen to? Someone who's like, I'll help, I'm not a doctor, or someone who says, I'll help, I'm a doctor. Like, I would rather have the doctor help, but That's not even real anymore, because a lot of these folks have become anti-vaxxers who look on the internet and are like, well, who should we listen to here? People who are experts or people who say very proudly that they have no idea what they're talking about. I'm gonna, you know, but the person who says they don't have any idea what they're talking about is speaking very confidently in a way that seems like they do think they know what they're talking about, but they're proud that they don't know what they're talking about. Maybe we should listen to them. No, you shouldn't. Let's listen to an expert.
Yeah. Or at the very least, someone who would like to know things and cares if what they say is true or not. We don't know if she has learned anything or cares. Her office did not respond to requests for comment. Does she care about any of this? Probably not. But maybe like a tiny bit, because we were gonna show you the video of her saying that, but it's been made unavailable. So someone in her office at least cares enough to take down the video of her saying something stupid. But there's a moving goalpost, because there's gonna be new stupid stuff next week. Anyway, really fast, just to make sure that people leave this video knowing even more than she knows. Guam, an island in the West Pacific Ocean, has been a US territory since 1898. So, you know, it's a little bit too recent for her to be aware of it. Following the Spanish-American War, its residents are US citizens who pay federal taxes, but not federal income tax. Many people in Guam serve in the US military, and it's considered to be of vital strategic importance. There are close to 6,200 active duty US troops in Guam, which is home to roughly 170,000 people. Guam residents cannot vote for president and do not have a vote in Congress. Like other US territories, they send a non-voting delegate to Congress, who I'm sure is gonna have some really awkward elevator rides with Marjorie Greene. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Every week, Brett and I choose one garbage person of the week, and the audience does as well. This week, I'm even going to read the one the audience chose. But first, Brett, who's your garbage person?
Callback. My garbage person of the week is one Seanathan Hannity. Sean Hannity, who with his president and best friend Donald Trump out of office, is having a little bit of withdrawal syndrome. And honestly, it's turned to psychosis. As in the wake of Joe Biden's speech about all people in America being eligible for COVID vaccination by May 1st, it seems like Hannity really needs to make it all about Trump in this horrible cringeworthy video.
Tonight, Joe Biden, he needs to pick up the phone. I suggest call Mar-a-Lago and bring unity to the country as he says he so desperately wants. And thank President Donald Trump, because a few moments ago, he tried to take credit for everything that Donald Trump did on COVID-19. Three vaccines, thanks to Donald Trump's Operation Warp Speed. There were already a million vaccines being administered into people's arms every single day when Biden was sworn in. 36 million doses had already been distributed. According to Joe, it was the Biden administration that stepped in, heroically saved America from COVID-19. None of this is true. Where's the unity, Joe?
Where's the unity, Joe? Well, it's weird because he's accidentally admitting, even if it's Donald Trump's doing, he's accidentally admitting that things are going well. That's my favorite part of that.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah,
it's because he can't
deny
that.
Thank him for everything. That's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's just so frustrating. That goes on for 8 minutes, and it is another one of those examples of Sean Hannity not really knowing what's in the prompter, not really caring, understanding that for the next 4 years he's got it pretty much set what he's gonna do, which is little crap like this where, if things are going well, he's gonna either pretend that it's not going well or say that it's Donald Trump's doing. And if he wants to get mad at that, he's being hypocritical anyway, because all of the economic benefits that Trump inherited, Hannity was immediately saying that they were Donald Trump's doing and not Obama's. So the hypocrisy reveals the tribalism, reveals the inability to really own up and do his job, which as a host of a news show should be to communicate reality, but instead it's to deliver this warped version of reality that is, it's almost like they're on some kind of shroom hallucinatory trip. But since, you know, those kinds of drugs are too expensive given our current medical system, he's just gonna give them that fun fantasy trip that they so desperately want.
And look, it's not like we've given some hypothetical credit to Trump. We did yesterday where, yes, did they put some money towards some of these vaccines? Yes. But for instance, when, you know, Trump comes out with that press release yesterday that's like, it would have been 5 years without this, or maybe never, when we're already giving people vaccines that weren't even a part of the program, well, then you lose me. You don't get the credit that even in theory you should deserve, I guess, if you're claiming that you alone were responsible for all of it, when, as we pointed out yesterday, literally any president would have put money into producing vaccines. That has nothing to do with Trump whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's like the one standout thing that he did do is the thing literally everyone would do. That, like, if it was Greg Gutfeld, he would have put money into vaccines. You don't get any credit for that. That's a bar that's, you know, so low, it's buried in the center of the earth.
And as proven, and we can prove that when Biden does something equally as intuitive as providing aid to people in the midst of a crisis, Hannity is in lockstep with all the reality denying Republicans who say this is a bad idea. It's the only idea.
And let's be consistent about the transitions between presidents. Do you give credit for things that happened before? Do you give the new guy a pass for bad things leading into it? Is Hannity, is Hannity communicating a general stance that should apply to many things, or is he talking just about this? He wants to pretend that he is making some sort of generic, like idea of what his values are. But he's not going to, for instance, give Biden a bit of a pass on the economy maybe being rough for the first couple quarters because of the absolute devastation that happened before he was president. He's not going to do that. And also, he's gonna pretend that things are what they were not. Are things going really smoothly now? Yes, they seem to. Had some vaccines been done by the time Biden got inaugurated? Yes, but that doesn't mean that everything was peaches and cream. We had huge supply chain issues. The initial huge amounts of vaccinations that were being done started to fall because the DPA had not been invoked, which Biden then did. Not to mention the fact that Trump effectively said, we're gonna send the vaccine out, but we're not gonna tell you anything about how to do it, which led to some successes in some states and other states having huge issues in actually getting it into people's arms. Biden helped to institute actual guidance for how the vaccination should be done. So it is not just Biden came in and I guess we can keep doing what we were doing. These are all issues that we were talking about at the time that he's now pretending never happened. But it's a good garbage person for that reason. So good choice there.
Thanks.
Okay. My garbage person of the week. I swear I didn't want to be my garbage person. I really did try. My producers can attest to I looked for others, but this was unfortunately the biggest garbage person. So my garbage person is Tucker Carlson, shown here exaggerating. Put it in the trash. Why is he a garbage person?
So good.
Thank you. For every reason. For me having to talk about him, he's a garbage person. But all this week, he is, you know what, we're in like, supposed to be a month that shows appreciation to women. And he has decided, no, I'm gonna do the exact opposite of that. So literally every day has been some high profile attack against women in different parts of American society. And then it came to the military. And so he did two whole shows attacking women in the military and pretending that they make a mockery of our military, that they're gonna result in China invading us because we have women in the military. Here's what's gonna happen though. I'm not showing you the video. I can't take it. I don't wanna hear his voice. I don't wanna see his face. I've already reached my limit this week. So I'm just gonna show you this headline. He was attacked after the first show by military leaders for mocking pregnant service members, which like I get that in theory, it seems like his show is being produced like how Family Guy said The Simpsons was, that they just, you know, like pull a couple of things out or whatever and mash them up. The idea that Tucker Carlson would spend his program mocking to his millions of viewers active duty pregnant service members seems insane. If you wanna see specifically what he said, you can go see it. I'm not gonna show it to you. What I will show you though is the response from a number of those women who are very much not mockeries of our military. They are our military. And so here's Heather Triegel, who said, I've had two children while serving the army, deployed to two combat zones, advised commanders at home and in war, and graduated from the Naval War College. I can assure you my presence does not make a mockery of the military. If you're looking for a mockery, look in the mirror, which is good. I like that. Stephanie said, I'm pregnant in all of these photos and also won the two highest awards in my field as a company commander, the DoD Award for Maintenance Excellence and the Combat Repair Team of the Year. I've had two children on active duty, STFU Tucker Carlson, which is always the only message that needs to be delivered to him. Let's see. Oh yeah, that was South Park attacking Family Guy, actually not the other way around. Anyway, LTG Ted Martin says, contrary to what you may be hearing, this woman and thousands of women like her are not making a mockery of the military. You wish your daughter was as awesome as mine, so back off, and attached a photo of his daughter who does look both awesome and badass. Like I just don't, I know that he doesn't care. And by the way, when the military like stood up for female service members, including pregnant service members, he then did a second show where he said, they've declared war on my program. Literally the same week as he spent two shows saying women who talk about being harassed are lying to make themselves victim. He's now saying the US military has declared war on him because they stood up for their warriors. They didn't even mention him. They subtweeted him to some extent, but they didn't even mention him. And I'm just so sick of the entire thing, especially that Brett, I know how successful it is. His audience, which is probably like 98% men, are gonna love this. They love the idea that they can reliably turn on this program and see one woman or another or a whole group of women being mocked, and they get to laugh at them and condescend to them. And he's gonna be fine. He's gonna make even more money after this. It's just the whole thing is just disgusting. I just hate every bit of it. I'm so thankful that at least it's Friday as I'm talking about this.
Maybe he's so bored and depressed that he is looking around saying to himself, what can I do? What third rail of Republican talking points can I get closest to peeing on without getting electrocuted? And so he's like, well, I know I can attack women. I know I can always already attack women. But what about women in the military? Can I form, just as a challenge to myself, because I am so bored and I hate this dynamic so much. I'm like a writer on Lost in season 5, where I'm like, I'm just tired of coming up with ridiculous mysteries. Like, at what point can I, how close can I get to making fun of the military, and in what way can I get away with it?
Mm-hmm. Got
and,
one.
And this is his latest attempt.
Yeah.
And I definitely echo all of your things. It's like Tucker watching and saying, wait a minute, someone else is a victim here? No, no, no. Only my audience gets to pretend that we are victims. And I'm going to do it again today and tomorrow and the next day till the end of time.
Yep.
Ugh.
Anyway, you know what? I'm very happy, though, to have something to transition to. So perhaps as a strike back against the fact that I forgot to read this last week, 43,000 of you voted in this garbage poll, which is amazing. But can I just quickly mention, there's something, I'll be super fast. There's something weird going on with the YouTube algorithm where like it's not sending out our videos to anyone. And so like views are way down. 43,000 people voted in this poll. So frustrating, the internet. Anyway, so you're there, so thank you. I don't know what the algorithm is doing. So anyway, thank you to the huge number of you who voted. And let's see who our garbage people are this week. Coming in at number 5 this week, it's 5% of the vote. Ben Shapiro for questioning Meghan Markle's accounts of racism. Coming in at number 4 with 10% of the vote, you have Piers Morgan for throwing a fit over Harry and Meghan's interview. So two related to that interview, but not super highly ranked. Coming in at number 3 with 16% of the vote, Kristen Sinema for having so much fun denying Americans money. Really, that was number 3? Number 2 with 31% of the vote, you have Republicans for watering down the COVID bill and then not voting. That's a good one. But number 1 at 39% of the vote, and your garbage person of the week, conservative Dems for voting against the minimum wage increase. True pieces of garbage, one and all. So thank you to all of you for voting. You very accurately chose the garbage people of the week.
Later on the show, on the Young Turks today, John and company will be discussing Pramila Jayapal, who said that Biden does promise her that there will be a fight for a $15 an hour minimum wage increase. Do you buy it? Or do you have even enough money at less than $15 an hour to buy it at all?
Or maybe you can't buy it.
Some kind of layaway program. Who knows?
Anyway, that should be fun. But before then, Brett, thank you as always. What can people expect in Common Room tonight?
Common Room tonight is myself, Nick Marzoc, who wrote the music. He, you know, is a music producer and an amazingly talented musician. We got a couple of really talented musicians. Nick also, you know, has produced music on American Dad, and he produced the music for the, you know, As the White House Turns intro. We also have Yasmin Khan is going to be back on the show, and Ariana Vega will be on today. So it'll be a lot of fun.
That sounds like a great panel, Brett. Thank you for everything you did, minus a few of the things you did.
Yeah, makes sense. Pretty standard.
Anyway, thank you everybody for watching, not only today, but throughout the week. Hopefully you'll join us on the first hour of the Young Turks, as we were just talking about. We'll be there. We always have fun on the power panel, and I hope to see you there. Until then, though, stay safe out there, stay sane out there, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.